In June of 2016, if you remember the mass shooting in Orlando at a gay nightclub, I attended a worship service hosted by the Open Table Dinner Church right after that event happened. The Open Table Dinner Church is an emerging ministry in the Boston area. Raw and trembling with fresh grief and confusion, we gathered on the Tuesday night after the event happened in someone's living room to eat dinner, share, reflect, pray, draw, sing, and scream. Yes, we did a loud as possible collective scream to release our rage and anguish. Maybe someday we'll do that here. Worship services like this one with Open Table, which is a Christian ministry, and those hosted by a variety of Unitarian Universalist ministries, such as the Sanctuaries in Washington, D.C., Original Blessing in Brooklyn, the Sanctuary Boston, Beloved Cafe in Berkeley, California, and the UU Community Cooperatives in the Boston area, among others, are examples of faith community that are emerging and grounded in practice-oriented spirituality. I believe it is these emerging practice-oriented communities that will survive and thrive in the 21st century. So what makes them different? What makes them practice-oriented? And what can we learn from them? Well, to start, we have to understand what they are emerging from, right, as emerging ministries. And so let's take a look at spirituality in America in the 20th century. In 20th century America, we primarily saw two types of spirituality or religious orientation. We had dwelling and seeking. A spirituality of dwelling is all about living your faith in a particular spiritual home. It is marked by lifelong membership in a church, attending services every week, and following the rules. According to Robert Wuthnow, author of After Heaven, Spirituality in America Since the 1950s, a spirituality of dwelling emphasizes habitation. God occupies a definite place in the universe and creates a sacred space where humans too can dwell. To inhabit sacred space is to know its territory and to feel secure. Now, right after World War II, this kind of spirituality blossomed. The baby boom and the suburbanization of America influenced churches of this era, and at the time, churches of this era became places for people to dwell, to feel safe, to be at home, to be secure in a rapidly changing post-war world. Perhaps some of you grew up in a church such as this or have had experiences with communities of dwelling spirituality. There is a real warmth, a security, and that amazing feeling of being at home that you might find in dwelling spirituality. This is the church, after all, that welcomes in refugees. This is the church that invites people in to be safe. It is a church that offers people a warm meal and a smile if they've been on the journey for too long and need a place to rest. The downside of dwelling spirituality, of course, is its rigidity and the possibility of spiritual stagnation. Located as it is in one place at all times, it can create a sense of powerlessness or being trapped. I suspect some of you who came out of traditions at some point in the 20th century might be able to understand that pretty well. When it comes to leadership models, which is our theme for this month, we're thinking about leadership, religious authority and power in dwelling-oriented spiritual communities is placed in the institution. Systems of hierarchy are closely followed, and educated clergy who are educated in institutions run each local church. It's all right. So we've got dwelling down. Good? Excellent. So, a spirituality of seeking, on the other hand, is all about exploring new landscapes. This kind of spirituality rose to prominence in the 1960s and continues to dominate to this day. As Wuthnow says, a spirituality of seeking emphasizes negotiation. Individuals search for sacred moments that reinforce their conviction that the divine exists, but these moments are fleeting. Rather than knowing the territory, people explore new spiritual vistas. And there are so many benefits to this kind of spirituality. It is liberating, exciting, invigorating to be free, especially if you once felt trapped by an institution. The inner journey in this kind of spirituality really comes alive as people are free to explore and read and meditate, go on spiritual quests and retreats, and so much more. These activities of searching and seeking are rewarded and highly valued in the seeking spirituality, but traditional churches, not so much. Churches in the second half of the 20th century after the 1960s became one option for spiritual seekers living in a new age smorgasbord of options. But churches were no longer automatically secure, cozy homes for people. They became more like spiritual marketplaces. People went to church searching for spirituality, trying to find it, consume it, and pastors and longtime members all went nuts trying to figure out what new program to offer, what new thing to do to keep up with all of this and bring in new people and younger members usually. Which brings us to the downside of seeking spirituality, a feeling of homelessness and despair. Withnow says a spirituality of seeking results in a transient spiritual existence characterized more often by dabbling than depth. In other words, this is spirituality that's a mile wide but only an inch deep, our greatest UU sin, and it is not enough. As for leadership models, religious authority in seeking-oriented spirituality is held by experts, gurus in a spiritual field, and often by each person's unique experience of the holy. This is the spirituality of me and my desires. So there we have it. So that's seeking. You got that one down too? Now, neither dwelling nor seeking were new in the 20th century, and neither of them are ever going to go anywhere, because these are ancient, worthy, good spiritual orientations found across all of the world's religions across time. Dwelling spirituality speaks to us across the millennia of the promised land, a mighty fortress, temple, religion, priests, monasteries, and intentional living communities. And seeking spirituality speaks to us across the millennia of 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness, pilgrims, the early Buddha wandering as a monk, Hajj, the Islamic pilgrimage to Mecca, and vision quests in Native American cultures. So as you can see, these are both ancient forms of spirituality that have had their moments. However, while these two modes of spirituality have been historically present in most world's religions, neither of these models of spirituality is entirely satisfactory. The spirituality of dwelling forces dependence on communities that are inherently undependable. It encourages idolization of particular places to a point of distracting engagement with pressing human needs in a complex world. But on the other hand, a spirituality of seeking is too unstable to provide the support of social structures that individuals need and to encourage the stability required to grow spiritually and to become mature in character. Enter practice-oriented spirituality. Practice-oriented spirituality combines elements of dwelling and seeking. It offers a spiritual home and a spiritual journey at the same time. It is not the institution above all else. It is not the marketplace. Practice-oriented spirituality incorporates the strengths of both types of dwelling and seeking and minimizes their weaknesses. Practice-based spirituality is exactly what it sounds, regular, intentional spiritual practice, but it is not done in isolation. It is deeply communal and social. Spiritual practices such as prayer, meditation, contemplation, study of sacred texts, devotional reading, and service to the community are all collective efforts. There's also a framework in practice-oriented communities. It's not as rigid as the mid-20th century models, but it's also not a New Age smorgasbord either, and not everything goes, right? So practices are vetted and engaged in community, but never ossified. And personal whims and desires take a backseat to the needs of the collective whole. So how does leadership work in practice-based spiritual communities? Good question. Authority in practice-based communities comes from the congregation's common life. Leadership and power is based on authentic spiritual experiences. Ministers are qualified for ministry because they have an authentic religious core. However, ministers ordained in the 19th and 20th century models of traditional church, that's me, are not always leading emerging churches. And either way, ordained or otherwise, leadership is often shared. So, ordained or otherwise, one's own mature spiritual journey is the source of a leader's authority. So I have a question. So if this is where we're going, and I think it is, who's going to lead the way? We have a lot of young people in the room today on our multi-generational Sunday, and I don't think we need to look any farther than that, because young people, you are going to be leading us into the future of the church. And you are going to be living in a practice-oriented spiritual community for a long time to come. And I trust you all, okay? Can I have the attention of all the young people? I trust you to lead the way for us, all right? And the adults here, we're going to do our very best to give you all the support you need to explore and develop meaningful spiritual practices that will last a lifetime. I believe the church that you will be a part of, that we will all be a part of in the years to come, will be quite different than what we see today. It's not going to be about excellent preaching or multimedia presentations or the newest technology or fancy thing. It's going to be exclusively about having an experience with the holy, having an encounter with the divine. What that means, I'm not entirely sure, but I imagine it will be something like what I experienced at Open Table a couple of years ago, highly participatory, creative, and intimate. It will include sharing a meal, breaking bread together, exploring, singing, drawing, lighting candles, sharing stories, who knows what else, but I'm excited to find out. UU ministers Kathleen Rollins and Wayne Arneson agree that the church of the future, when church going is not mandatory, but an intentional part of one's spiritual journey, will have bold new worship practices. And I wanted to share with you some of what they see. They say, intentional church going involves seeing worship as the primary spiritual practice that informs everything else a person does in the church. Intentional churchgoers believe that participating in church life has the power to transform their lives toward greater depth, joy, and meaning. Intentional church life engages members in a community that sees itself as more than a civic institution or club or school, that sees itself as a continuing embodiment of a religious way of life and tradition. That way of life is revealed in stories, images, music, and metaphors that speak of ethical imperatives and incarnated truths. It is revealed in worship. So, church. The way forward from here is exciting and challenging. We are all simultaneously leaders and learners in this movement towards practice-oriented spirituality. And we're all going to be a little uncomfortable sometimes as the church finds its way forward and we experiment and try new things. And let me be the first to say that there is no model that we can copy that will make our church thrive in the 21st century. There's no magic formula that we can adopt, so I can't offer you that. But I can say that I am committed to exploring these ideas and trying new things with you all as we lean into a new era of practice-based spirituality. So, let's try home church. Let's try pub theology. These are both examples of community collective spiritual practice and spiritual direction, spiritual practices that we can do together as a community. Let's try brave new participatory things in worship, and let's hold on to the things that we love from our heritage. Let's sing new songs. Let's sing our beloved and cherished old songs. Let's try something crazy, like, I don't know, a testimony practice in worship where we all get to share with each other and tell our stories. Let the preacher try preaching without notes. Wait a minute. I'll put that in there. That actually terrifies me, but I think it is the future of preaching, so I'm going to have to at least try, I suspect, at some point, if I am going to thrive in the 21st century of ministry. So maybe someday I'll try that. Let's do whatever it takes to facilitate an experience with the holy, or whatever it is that we consider to be greater than the self for each person in our community. The future of the church rests in how we worship together and engage in communal spiritual practices. Our future leadership will be born out of these practices of faith by those who develop an authentic religious center at the core of their lives. May this be so. Amen, and blessed be.